Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. We hope you've been enjoying the holiday season. Tonight, I'm joined by some of my WTTW News colleagues. They'll open up their reporters' notebooks to talk about the stories they'll be watching out for in 2026 and help us understand why they matter and how they could affect you. Joining us are Brandis Friedman, Heather Sharone, Joanna Hernandez, and Matt Masterson. Thank you all for being here. I trust you found the studio okay without too much trouble.
Lost.
It happens.
Somebody was able to help me.
Well, thank you all for being here anyway. Heather, starting off with you, you've had quite the last couple months covering the dueling budget proposals from Mayor Johnson and a group of more moderate and conservative alders, the latter of which, of course, eventually passed. But Johnson's administration says this budget is out of whack. Do we have any sense yet of when we'll know if the city is facing a deficit?
Well, we should know pretty soon based on what the budget director and chief financial officer told the city council when they sort of overrode their objections and their warnings to go ahead and pass this budget. Just, you know, at the end of the year, there was a lawsuit filed over a new online gaming tax that the city is counting on $26 million. There's also a likely lawsuit over a plan to tax social media companies. So most years, by this time, you sort of know what the city is in store for in the coming year. There are many, many question marks in the city's budget.
Well, and of course, you know, the mayor's been facing setbacks trying to get wealthy residents and businesses to pay up. There was the Bring Chicago Home measure that failed. There was the head tax proposal that Alders shot down. Here's what the mayor told us last week about his sometimes contentious relationship with Alders.
Whenever you're leading in a transformational way, you know, folks will, you know, feel that pressure. That doesn't intimidate me. You know, the people of Chicago elected me to stand up for everyday people, and that's essentially what I'm doing.
So how tough might it be to get measures that the mayor backs aimed at getting, you know, the wealthy to pay more passed this year, especially with the city election looming in 2027?
I mean, I try not to make predictions, but I think the chances are probably somewhere between slim and none. You're right. We are headed into an election year here in Chicago. All 50 Alder people will be up. The mayor says he plans to seek re-election, and that is not the time when elected officials typically look to impose new taxes on their residents. Now, however, if the mayor is right and the city's budget is deeply unbalanced, the city council may have no choice but to sort of figure out what to do. And as much as they don't like taxing people in an election year, they will distinctly dislike cutting services in an election year as well.
Absolutely. You know, Joanna, you've been covering the Trump administration's immigration enforcement efforts, which have slowed for now, but they're still active. We expect another surge perhaps in the spring. Do the folks that you talk with when you're out there reporting, do they feel like they're better prepared, especially for like rapid response efforts, more so than they were perhaps at the beginning of Operation Midway Blitz?
Well, like the short answer is yes. I mean, we're watching these response groups be more prepared and proactive. I mean, they've had to expand quickly, right? They've had no choice, from legal services to the Know Your Rights campaigns to blow your whistle trainings. I mean, we're watching more volunteers join a variety of groups, right? From on the ground, volunteering, blowing their whistles, seeing what's going on to their neighborhoods. From the story that I did where there's a group of moms who go and pick up dozens of kids every day and drop them off at school because they don't want these kids to miss their education, right? But then there's also these challenges because you just don't know when or where these ICE operations are going to take place. But they've created the system, right, to offer all these variety of services. So are they prepared? Yes, but there's still many, many challenges ahead.
Yeah, you don't necessarily know how that system needs to get deployed.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think most of us were here last year sort of looking ahead at 2025 and sort of saying we don't know what immigration is going to look like in 2025. And I think that had you sort of had a crystal ball and made the prediction and described what had happened in Chicago in the past year, nobody would have believed it. Because I think if you had said that there would have been multiple tear gas deployments on the streets, hundreds of people with no criminal records detained and deported or, you know, sort of, you know, held essentially incommunicado, I think many people would have watched that show and said, you guys are being unnecessarily alarmist. And I think that that gives me a deep pause in sort of trying to think about what's coming up in the next couple of months, that we just don't know what the Trump administration has in store for Chicago. Yeah. And I think the experience of the last year should make us all very sort of wary of sort of knowing what is coming.
Well, and speaking of, you know, the Trump administration, Matt, they've been getting a ton of legal pushback, a flurry of lawsuits related to Midway Blitz that you've been following for us. What are you keeping an eye on in the coming months?
Some of the biggest ones are winding down. The Trump administration's sought to deploy National Guard troops. That's been stopped by the Supreme Court. The other lawsuit seeking to restrict federal agents' use of force, that is being voluntarily withdrawn later this year. The big one that's still going right now is related to the Broadview ICE facility. It's the West Suburban facility that's also acted as a detention center, which saw hundreds of people crammed into small rooms without bathrooms, without private, without any privacy, without any medical treatment for days on end when they're not supposed to be there for more than 12 hours. There's an order in place that restricts that. It's supposed to last until the spring. Currently, the population at the Broadview Center is way down because, as you said, the operations have dwindled for now, but it's going to pick back up. And once that happens, what's going to happen to the people who are held there? This lawsuit is going to try to regulate what's going to happen there. Are they going to get beds? Are they going to get three meals a day? Are they going to be able to talk to their attorneys? Or are ICE agents going to continue handing them sheets and asking them to voluntarily deport without explaining what's happening? That's what people have been testifying has been happening to them since they've been there over these months. So that lawsuit is maintaining. And back on the use of force one, that is gone or will be gone shortly for now. But that dealt with misconduct allegations that have already happened. Yeah. Once ICE and Border Patrol comes back, it's very likely there's going to be new misconduct allegations. There could very well be new lawsuits, new litigation regulating that as well. But we just, like to Heather's point, we aren't going to know what's going to happen until it happens.
Feels like a race against the clock.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and Brandis, as we mentioned, it's expected there's going to be another surge coming up, possibly in the spring. Of course, we're also looking at the midterm elections coming up in March. Do you think, you know, perhaps the fear of getting detained could depress turnout? That's something Governor Pritzker warned about National Guard troops, but certainly immigration agents could have that effect as well.
Right. And I think everybody who supports democracy is hoping that that won't be the case, right? I think it'll really depend, of course, on when those agents should turn up in the city and what kind of tactics they're using. Are they deploying the same tactics that we've already seen, or have they switched it up based on, you know, their experiences here as well as in other cities? But I think, you know, for folks who don't like what they're seeing out of the Trump administration, an election is their opportunity to make their voices heard. Obviously, they're in the city of Chicago. There are not a lot of Republicans or Trump supporters, but there are some. So, you know, the reverse of that is true as well, for folks to make their voices heard. But even if there is not a major national election aside from, you know, Senator and, of course, the primary elections for the House of Representatives, you know, that stuff is obviously on the ballot and very important. The local stuff is very important as well, talking to you, school board. So hopefully that is not the case, that folks still, you know, use their opportunity to vote.
And we will get to that school board election coming up. But, you know, Joanna, you've been reporting a lot on how this enforcement has had an effect on businesses in Chicagoland neighborhoods, especially ones with large migrant populations. What kind of work will folks be doing to try and help those businesses, those local economies recover?
You know, like the reality is that it's going to take time and it's going to be really hard because people are still afraid to go out to restaurants. I mean, I just went to my favorite local restaurant last week and it was empty when it's usually full on a Sunday. Latinos, we love to go out to eat. But really, it's going to take some time. We obviously seen like community support. We've seen people do fundraisers. We've seen people raise funds. We've seen people make videos to try to come to support these businesses. But it's going to be hard because without any financial help, like during the pandemic, we saw some of these businesses get help, right? Now there's none of that. So it's, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these businesses, unfortunately, they don't make it.
Yeah, especially after many that's, you know, struggled for years during COVID. You know, this was yet another blow to them. Well, Heather, another story you've been following is Chicago's police discipline system. It's frozen in place right now, pending a ruling from the state Supreme Court about whether officer discipline can go to a private arbitration versus a public hearing. Here's some of what the Chicago Police Board president had to say about that recently.
Police officers carry guns. Police officers have the ability to decide life and death, and it is an incredibly tough and dangerous job, and I personally want to thank all the men and women of the Chicago Police Department who put their lives on the line every day to do that job. But at that same time, because of that ability to decide those decisions, there's a certain responsibility and a level of transparency that I think that they owe to the city of Chicago to make sure that accountability is transparent and public.
So, Heather, remind us why arbitration is up for debate here, and do we have any sense of when we might expect a ruling?
Well, we don't know when the Supreme Court is going to rule. Unfortunately, they don't share their timeline with us in the news media, very much so. But it will be several more months, and assuming that the Supreme Court eventually rules, it will be months after that before this new system is ready to sort of adjudicate these cases. And they are the most serious cases of police misconduct, and really the question is whether officers should be subject to a public hearing that could result in their termination or suspension of up to a year. And the city has sort of said that, and we heard the police board president say, these cases should be decided in public. But we also saw union president John Catanzara sitting right there. They firmly believe that police officers have the right to have these matters handled in private because they are personal discipline matters. That's a zero-sum game, and it's going to be up to the Supreme Court, which, of course, does have a majority of Democrats, to figure out how to decide this very, very serious issue.
Yeah, a lot of folks watching that ruling very closely. Matt, going back to the midterms for a minute, 2026 will mark the first time that Chicago's full 21-member school board is elected. What are you going to be watching out for as those races play out?
The spending is the obvious thing about how much money is going to be going into these races. We got dipped our toes into this with the first round of this, with half the board being elected in the previous cycle. But with an entirely new board, it's going to be crazy to see what happens with the control there. It's been mayorally controlled even up till now for decades and decades. Now it's going to be, you know, the board of the people. They're going to pick every single one of these representatives. Even through this first year of a partially elected board, there's been far more discussion and arguments, and I could probably count on one hand the amount of votes I've seen previous to this that had any no votes to it. Every vote was always unanimous in favor of whatever was on the agenda. That's absolutely no longer the case. There's been a lot of pushback on a lot of items that are brought by the mayor. This has also been brought by interim CEO Macaline King with her budget. This has been a huge issue. And once the board is fully elected and the mayor doesn't have control over any of these people, it's going to be very interesting change to see how this goes going forward.
Democracy is important, right, but it's also messy sometimes.
Yes, there's the money that goes into it. I'm also curious to see about the sort of alliances that form. We know that the charter organizations, as well as we know that the Chicago Teachers Union are definitely going to want to get their money in and to get their candidates at the forefront. So I'm also very curious to see what kind of alliances start to shake out of this.
And the fact that the mayor has picked half of this board already, those people have been serving for a year. They're incumbents. It's very likely that many or all of them are going to be elected. So the mayor may not have direct control of them as he has, but those people that he's put in place likely are going to continue on the board going forward.
Yeah, at least aligned with him, if not chosen by him, you know, rather than the voters. Well, sticking with education, Brandis, there are also a lot of questions about how the unwinding of the Department of Education will continue to play out. What effect on CPS and many other school districts, for that matter, will you be watching for?
I think one of the big concerns that people are concerned about is funding, right? Because a lot of the roles and responsibilities of the Department of Ed have been, you know, sort of divided among several other cabinet level agencies. Maybe the Department of Labor, which has never operated the Department of Education before and does not necessarily have that experience or the infrastructure to get it done, how is that going to play out? How are school districts still going to be able to access the funding that they typically have the opportunity to access, be it through the portal or through grant funding and application opportunities to get some funding? I think a lot of people are concerned about what will happen with funding for special education, with Title I, and how that's going to get divided. Are there going to be, you know, funding programs that once you've moved one out of the Department of Education into, say, Interior or whatever, if you've got redundancy, then does one of them get eliminated? And now there's less money going to the problem altogether, which some folks would say that's the point, right? They would say that is the point to sort of eliminate some of that. I'm also curious about whether or not CPS will continue to be the target of the department or whatever happens at the federal level, the Department of Education or whoever is in charge, specifically around the Black Student Success Plan that the district has already taken a lot of heat over. And we know just this week, the Brighton Park Neighborhood Council and the American Federation of Teachers, they are suing the Department of Education, even naming Secretary of Education Linda McMahon as a defendant over funding cuts to full-service community schools. Are we going to see more like this? Probably.
Yeah.
Obviously, the unwinding of the Department of Education legislation has been introduced. Congress still has to pass it. And so is that going to happen before the election happens? And later on, could we be looking at a different Congress and a new bill doesn't get introduced if they don't get this done in this Congress.
Yeah, well, and Matt, you mentioned, you know, Maculin King, the interim CEO. The district is still without a permanent leader. Do we have any sense of the timeline as to when we may have a permanent CEO in place?
There's no signs that it's going to get done anytime soon this year. We've moved forward with Maculin King for several months. It appeared even as recently as November that there was going to be a new pick relatively soon. Those names have backed out. There's currently, the mayor at that point was telling new people to submit their names. That at that point, the spot had been open for months. And it doesn't seem like there's going to be a quick resolution to this. There have been some calls for people to wait on this overall until the elected board is in place so that the mayor doesn't install a new CEO before then, but that's a year from now. So that would be a very long time for an interim role. It sounds like Maculin King is not the person for this job, at least that she was not one of the finalists who was named previously. So she may end up serving for a very long time in an interim role, but it seems like it's not under, there's not going to be an immediate resolution to this.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a surprise to hear the mayor say that when it seemed like it was so close along. And he says, I wouldn't wait, you know, bank on it anytime soon.
Yeah, well, you know, this is sort of the growing pains, right, between transitioning from mayorally controlled board, where it was a sort of a constituency of one, to now this very complicated process to sort of name a CEO and sort of, you know, get it through the board. But, you know, like we said, democracy is sometimes messy. But I think it's important to note that now Chicago will join the rest of the state in electing its school board representatives. So I think that is a long-sought sea change. But I think it's one of those changes that nobody can truly predict how it's exactly going to play out.
Joanna, another education story that you've been covering that we wanted to highlight. This is Roosevelt University's efforts to help more people become pharmacists. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed doing the story. It was, like, refreshing. But so from everything that happens,
yeah. To have a refreshing story.
Yes,
we needed something happy in here tonight.
I needed something happy. But it was really interesting because Walgreens partners with different universities, one of them being Roosevelt University, and that's how I met this young man called Freddie Gomez. And what's so interesting about him is that he started as a sales associate at Walgreens in Belmont Cragen. And he graduated, didn't know what he wanted to do, of course. Too many hard decisions.
Right.
But he realized that Walgreens and Roosevelt University, they partnered to offer people to get their degree in pharmacists. And he got his doctorate in pharmacy. So now he's a manager at that same place that he started. But what's a full circle moment is that he's first generation. He comes from a Mexican-American household. And he tells a story of remembering when he was little and having to go to the pharmacy and translating for his mom, which many of us have to do. I did it as well. So it's really nice, a full circle moment. And now he works with also students at Roosevelt University to intern them. So they need more Latino pharmacists. So it was really nice to just get to see him in action and also see how his customers are just happy to be able to communicate with him.
Yeah, something positive.
It was a lighthearted story,
yeah.
Yes.
All right, Heather, another, you know, we're waiting on that CEO timeline. Another timeline we don't have a lot of insight into. This is Chicago's Community Police Oversight Commission. They recommended changes to the police department's traffic stop policy some 8 months ago. Do you expect any action on that? Do we have any sense of when there might be movement?
So this is one of the problems with the consent decree, right? It is now as part of that project, and there is no sort of internal deadlines that says you have to have this policy done by this time. That's why we're approaching the 7th anniversary of the consent decree, and the consent decree keeps expanding potentially to include traffic stops. What that will eventually mean, I think it will look like, it is still up in the air. This is a situation where we have a disagreement between Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling and the Oversight Board. Chicago police want the ability to stop people on what they call a pretextual basis for broken lights and other sort of equipment violations, where the commission says police officers should not be allowed in most cases to make those kind of stops. That, again, another zero-sum issue, and how it eventually gets resolved, I think, will be a big, big story in this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brandis, we talked a little bit about the education department. We've also seen the Trump administration taking aim at DEI initiatives. A lot of companies and universities, you know, critics say, are essentially bending the knee here. Here is how one Northwestern University professor reacted after that school reached a settlement with the DOJ about DEI policies and allegations of anti-Semitism. Let's take a listen.
The Trump administration is using its funding as a cudgel to force Northwestern to enact their policy preferences, some of which are unconstitutional and many of which are illegal.
So if this sort of chipping away at the independence of universities continues, how dramatically could that change higher ed in the U.S., especially if they start looking at, you know, some smaller names than like Harvard and Northwestern?
Right. Well, and I mean, some, right? Yeah. And I think we've already seen that happen. I think there are some students who would argue that, you know, all of these changes are sort of a capitulation of these universities to the Trump administration. You know, going forward, I'm especially interested to see if some of the steps that universities like Northwestern, you know, the steps that they are required to take under these agreements, if they are going to, if you're going to start to see less diversity both in their student enrollment, but also in their faculty and staff, or is that some of that going to get rolled back, you know, because of this scrutiny from DOJ, and are we going to start to see, you know, these schools become less diverse, right? And that said, with regard to, you know, protect Jewish students, a lot of, you know, Jewish students and their advocates have said that these steps are the right ones that need to be taken to protect them. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see, you know, if there is some other need for students to have mass protests like the ones that we saw after October 7th. Are they going to feel like their freedom of speech is being encroached upon, no matter what they say, right? Because some of what some students have heard is absolutely hate speech, right. And some they believe to be free speech. So I'm curious about that. I think some of the bigger issues, though, are whether or not the Trump administration is using funding to get what it wants, mm-hmm. sort of like what our expert Laura Beth Nielsen just said there. And I have to say, right, you mentioned we haven't seen this happen to some of the smaller schools, right? But the tactics have specifically been aimed at elite schools in states where the governors are Democrats, right? I'm talking about looking to the South, Baylor, Vanderbilt, Emory, Tulane. All of those schools are in states where the governors are Republican. They are not having this problem out of the Trump administration.
Interesting. I'm sure that's merely a coincidence.
No, it's coming. Yeah. I can't predict the future either.
Right, nor should we try if we want to be responsible. All right, well, Joanna, speaking of higher ed, I know you're watching out for a crackdown on people who default on their student loans. What are the details there?
There's no good news. There's no good news for student loan borrowers. So the news is that the Trump administration announced it will begin garnishing wages for borrowers who are in default, which means that people who have not been paying their loans as early as next year, which means the Department of Education says it will send notices to about 1,000 borrowers, and then they will keep going throughout the month. And of course, this comes as a year-long pause during the pandemic. Many people didn't have to pay their loans.
Right.
But now, you know, the Department of Education says they're sending a 30-day notice. You have time to make a plan, or they will start garnishing your wages. So it's not great news going into this new year.
Yeah, it's going to be a hit on some folks' pocketbooks for sure. Matt, you mentioned this earlier, the status of ICE's Broadview Processing Center, used as a detention center. There's also the possibility of new DHS facilities in the area. What's on your radar there?
Kristi Noem has talked about touring facilities around Illinois. Currently, Broadview is the only ICE-run facility in Illinois that is obviously only meant as a detention center where people are held for 12 hours and then processing center where they're then moved out of state into a full-time detention center. That doesn't exist in Illinois. It's possible that they will look to purchase some sort of property to do something like that. But the concern there is that Broadview currently is operating relatively fine. The population there is very low. There's a restraining order in place that mandates that people there get beds, get food, get proper treatment. If they are concerned about that population skyrocketing again, that's the big concern, that they're already looking for another area to house people that they're going to detain.
Yeah. The other thing I'll be curious about is whether or not Secretary Noem, you know, as she's looking at these other facilities, if she's in touch with local officials in those areas, because we know we've heard from the Broadview mayor that the attention that facility has gotten and brought to her city was not something that she ever wanted. I think she was getting a lot of complaints from her residents about the protests and the skirmishes happening there.
Or if she honestly really cares. Or what other people think.
I'll be curious to see if she even bothers.
Yeah. I want to quickly touch on that. I've interviewed some people who've been detained, and one of the things that they continue to say is just the inhumane conditions, right, that are happening in Broadview, but also the other detention centers that they're being taken. I don't think there's a lot of attention in that, and people who are detained in these facilities in the way that they're being treated. So I think that's something that I'm also going to keep an eye on, and got to see what Kristi Noem says,
there's a lot to watch out for this year, but with you four on the case, I know we will have lots of information forthcoming. That is all the time that we have for right now, so our thanks to Brandis Friedman, Heather Sharon, Joanna Hernandez, and Matt Masterson. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. That's at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, Matt, another trial you spent a lot of your life the last couple of years covering. That is former House Speaker Michael Madigan. Where do things stand? He's got an appeal and a pardon pending. What's happening there?
His appeal is underway. He's pardoned. He's made his appeal to the president as well for a pardon. That seems extremely unlikely. He's the face of Democratic politics in Illinois for half a century. It does not seem that he's going to be getting any clemency from the president. His appeal is going to take probably most of 2026 before there's any sort of resolution there. Meanwhile, his confidants from the ComEd 4 are all going away to jail now after their own convictions. Michael McLean began his prison sentence just this week. Other people who were convicted in that as well are already in jail, so he's going to at least have a bit of a stay there for now before his appeal is decided.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, righting the heaviest wrongs for more than 40 years.